Mini episode 1829 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1829. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Steve Callis, and we have comprised over the last several years two-thirds of the group that you will get to do the first baseball segment of the season. Usually we get to this before the season. We didn't for reasons that we'll get into subsequently here, but from now on, just me and Steve for very sad reasons that we will kind of lead off with and do our little tribute at the beginning of the show. So, Steve, as always, good to have you on, my man. I couldn't think of anybody better to do this with under the circumstances than you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Rick, but as you know, and as you'll explain, a little bittersweet. Certainly miss Ken, who has been here every year for the last number of years, but I know you'll get into that. But I'm always happy to talk baseball with you, that's for sure.
Yes, very much so. Now, the last several years, ever since 2018, we've done the first segment of the season as a tribute, hearkening back to one of the shows. There are a number of shows at the Sports Talk Network back in the day. There were sort of forerunners of the FDH Lounge, and one of them was Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler, where I was a sidekick to him, and alongside his brother-in-law, Don Koster. Now, I first got pulled in to be sidekick on the show because Don was somebody where, and he passed away in late 2017, Don was in ill health for a number of years, so everything with him was always health allowing. And the first time I ever met Ken was in the winter of 2004 at the Sports Talk Network. He came in. We would subsequently call this Pitch and a Puck Saturdays, or Puck and a Pitch Saturdays, because I was doing a hockey show with Joe Lindway before that. Ken comes in to do the show afterwards, introduces himself to us, asks if either one of us would be interested in sticking around because Don couldn't make it that day. He would have been going solo. I said, absolutely. And I did 2 hours with Ken, having talked to him 5 minutes off the air, and felt like I'd known him my whole life. And this is one of these things where I always told everybody that would be coming on to do anything with him. I know I told you, Steve, this is what I always told people. This guy forms chemistry easier than anybody I've ever known. You talk to him a little bit, you're going to feel like you've known him your whole life because I lived that experience. And I know that was the case with you. You had a lot in common with him as somebody who you had played baseball and at a pretty good level as he had. He spent 50 years in coaching, 50 plus years. You've been very involved with baseball in the course of your life. So you guys, you know, he's, you know, somewhat older than you, but you guys, you know, not super far in, you know, not like one he is 25 and one he is 80, you know. So you guys, I knew, were going to fit well together as far as how all that went. And I know how much you enjoyed doing the segments with him. We got to do one the one time in person when your son was still living in town here. I think it was the attic of his apartment in Cleveland Heights. Ken and I drove out there on a winter night to meet up with you. And I think it was 2012, and we sat around and we did it in person. And it just I know that being on with Ken always lived up to everything that I told you it would be.
Well, I love the guy because he's a baseball lifer, and I love baseball lifers. I mean, lived it, breathed it, loved it. And as we often talked about, and as you know, to this day, hardest game to play, hardest game to coach, hardest game to understand, hardest game to be really good at. Hardest thing in all of sports, in my opinion, is still to hit a nasty curveball or a slider. And Ken was always there with an answer, knew so much about it, gave so much of his time, as you know better than I. But, yeah, I remember that day like it was yesterday because Johnny had just graduated from Oberlin, was working as a labor union organizer, and we all met at his apartment. isn't that where the Kelsey brothers are from also? I think they're
Yes. Cleveland Heights. It was cool. Again, And one of my friends has a saying about them. Joe Stazek loves this line, by the way, that the saying about that my friend, my good friend Bob Benek, longtime commissioner of our fantasy football league, hosts our Super Bowl parties every year. So it was the first Super Bowl. Well, the only one, I guess, where the Kelce brothers played each other, right? Because you didn't have Jason playing in the most recent Super Bowl against Travis. But you had those guys at the end of the game. My friend just looks at the TV and he goes, those guys are so Cleveland Heights. It's just like, what else can you say? I mean, you know, if you're from the North Coast, you know what he meant by that. But as Joe says, you can kind of glean it even if you're not from here, right? But yeah, Cleveland Heights, that's where we met up with you. And we've been doing these segments here. So we had been doing the first segment of the year and other segments during the year, the three of us together, but it took on a special meaning in 2018 and thereafter. So by the way, folks, so I've got it here for those checking out the video feed. So sue me, they're not the same size pictures here, but Ken on the left, and Don Koster on the right. And of course, Don would have been on our slides the last several years when we were doing the audio versions and putting them up on YouTube. And both great guys, both hilarious guys. Don had this very, very droll sense of humor, very, very curmudgeonly, but owned what he was. I always love people who own what they are. And, you know, Don just kind of owned being a curmudgeon and having these type of takes. And Ken was always, you know, the rose-colored glasses guy, particularly when it came to his favorite sports teams. Yeah. And there is a story, as I shared with you off here. This is something that I think would definitely make Ken laugh. This actually comes, ironically, from his recent funeral. So we're there. There was a bunch of the fellows that were there. I was sitting next to my good friend and longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Johnny Adams, who had gotten to be friends with Ken through his brother, FDH Lounge dignitary Dave Adams. Dave and Ken met through me. We played fantasy baseball a number of years together. Dave and Ken coached together, and now sadly are both on the other side. But Johnny had really kind of reached out to Ken a lot. Ken suffered the loss in the last year. It was the end of May last year of his beloved wife, Tracy, under sadly similar circumstances, just kind of collapsed, evident heart attack, whatever. She was only 65, so younger than him. He was 74, still too young. But Ken, yes, on March 20th, and 18 days before our great friend and fellow lounge dignitary, Anthony Patrone. So it's been a sad season here, but there was something that was kind of amusing at his funeral. So there was something that I had noticed a couple of rows in front of me with some amusement, a little bit of mirth here. I had expected that some of Ken's former players might show up for the service. And indeed, there was. I'm pretty sure that's what this guy was signaling, because he was wearing his jersey and appeared to have matching jersey pants. And perhaps controversially in a Catholic church, the cap as well.
Uh-oh.
So he's got that. So I look at him like, okay, I think he's taking us a bit far, but okay. So comes time for communion, and yours truly, having been diagnosed in the past several years with celiac disease, must take a pass on that. So Johnny walks past me to go up to communion. He comes back. And so as he comes back, I muttered to him, hey, you think number 44 is wearing cleats? And Johnny says, I looked, he's not. I said, what a poser. You're going to go that far? Commit to the bit, Steve. We're yep, cleats yep. with it.
Ken would have loved that. That's for
yes.
Sure.
Yes, he would have. I could picture him laughing. I could picture Don laughing. That's exactly Don's kind of sense of humor as well. But two great guys, two guys that I loved doing baseball talk with a number of years. And we always said when we did the segment 2018 to 2024 now, the years where it was just the Koster tribute before it now becomes the Detweiler Koster tribute. I would always say that Ken and I wanted to have you on because we felt like, because we'd always done the show with Don. I mean, it wasn't every time because, again, it was Don's availability. But the times when we had the most fun, it was the three of us. And those are the ones that we really kind of wanted to celebrate and look back on, those great shows at the Sports Talk Network. And that having somebody in you know, that was a worthy person to be in there in quote unquote Don's seat for the tribute for him. You know, you're the only person we could have gone with. You're the only out of all the folks who love baseball and cherish baseball, it had to be you. And that was what I always said. And you always said how much you were honored by that. And so, and I know that you have been, and I appreciate that. And so now going forward, you know, every year when we do the first one here, we'll celebrate Ken and Don and two folks who loved baseball. And the one thing that I think is really kind of fitting, because I talked a little bit before about the Adams brothers, Johnny and Davey. And so Johnny had not been a part of our one fantasy baseball league, the one that Dave had been commissioner of. I've subsequently taken over as commissioner. Johnny came in and for the last 2 years was a co-owner with somebody. And then at the last minute here, we had to figure out, because Ken's passing fell right between our keeper league auction that the previous Sunday. He passed away on the 20th. He was there on the 16th, and there's a group photo that the league took that we will always cherish that had Ken in it. And I'm happy to say the last time I saw him, you know, I made him smile. I found a surplus Bartolo Colon bobblehead that I had, a couple of ball cards I wanted to give him. So, you know, he cherished and was taking away these little knickknacks that I had for him. But this was before our non-keeper league draft that we did. So Johnny ended up taking the team. He split with his co-owner. He said, I'll take Ken's team. I'll do it for this year. And I said to him, I said, listen, dude, you don't have to do it beyond this year. If you're not as comfortable doing it, whatever. He's going to keep it, because I'll tell you what, through the course of the year, he's been telling me how much he has really enjoyed it and loved it. And he's watching more baseball and he's enjoying doing that. And I said, Ken would love that. Ken would absolutely, he loved how good you were to him in the last year, how much you tried to raise his spirits after Tracy passed away. And here you are now. You know, it's Ken always wanted more people. He evangelized the game of baseball. He loved the game of baseball. And the team that he was going to be running in 2025 is being run by somebody who cherishes and appreciates baseball and fantasy baseball and all of that, more so because of the experience that he's having in this regard. And I can't think of anything more fitting than that to say about him, Steve.
I think you've said it all. It's just very sad. I mean, to see the years that we did, even I was able to do together with you two guys. But again, you know, I don't want to be morbid, but, you know, the baseball lifers, I don't know that there's a lot of guys who are replacing them, you know, whether you're playing at a high level or coaching, Ken did both, or just loving the game. It's not like it was when I was a kid, you know, and your old man took you to the games and you just were like in awe, for me, of being in Yankee Stadium and, you know, Mickey Mantle's there. I never forget these things, and I'm sure Ken has his own memories. And you're right. With the Cleveland Indians, God bless both of you, you know, because you got to be a lover of the game.
Yeah.
But he was always sharp, always smart, always had an extra little something to add to these things that we did every year. And as you said, always jovial about it and loving baseball and happy to be there. I was so happy I did get to meet him that day with you.
Yeah.
At my son Johnny's apartment. It was really cool. But since then, I think that was big. It's what you said, though. As soon as you meet the guy in 5 minutes, you're like, A, he's a lifer. B, he's a great guy. Maybe vice versa. But it was a pleasure, and it still is an honor with Don and now with Ken. It's unfortunate. But as I said, I'm happy to do these things with you, Rick.
Yeah, and this is where I wouldn't have said this whilst he was still here, but I do feel like, you know, as far as like patient doctor confidentiality ends at the grave or whatever, there's a story I wouldn't have told that I feel like I can tell it now. So Ken happened to be in-laws with the Dolan family. Yes, that Dolan family. So wow. He and Tracy were out to eat one night with Paul Dolan and his wife. And I always said to Ken, I think you've heard the story off air. I always said to Ken, everybody, all the fans lived vicariously through you in this one moment. The check comes, Paul Dolan reaches for it, Ken grabs the check and says, put it towards a right-hand power bat. Thus earning a glower from Paul Dolan and earning the everlasting appreciation of myself and everybody else.
So, I bet. That's funny.
And that shows you the sense of humor of the man also as well. So God bless Ken Detweiler, Don Koster, we will always appreciate them, and we'll always take the occasion to look back and to talk about them and in a way that will bring smiles to our faces, because that's what they would have wanted. Now, I have to say that if somehow we were to miraculously beam Ken back here right now, I don't know that he would necessarily feel that disoriented looking at the standings. How's that for a bad segue? But, you know, we'll start in the American League here. And outside of, I mean, there's a few surprises here and there. I mean, I think the A's, notwithstanding, you know, that ballpark being, you know, for the dogs, basically. But outside of that, I mean, they've been performing well. Certainly Jacob Wilson coming up on my keeper team and playing like he's played has been something I didn't count on, and one of the big reasons I'm in first place in a 20-team keeper league. But the A's have been, you know, a positive surprise. Baltimore, a negative surprise. But even being, you know, six games out of first and approximately maybe six and a half out of the wild card, I mean, you know, if they whittle that to like three or four by the end of the month from the last playoff spot, they should still be okay. I don't know that in the Central there's too many surprises, unless you count Minnesota being where they're at. But I don't know that anybody really had that much high hopes for Minnesota this year. You've got Houston and Texas kind of middling a little bit. Texas making some interesting moves, you know, firing a, you know, coach and, you know, doing some things there to try to get things stirred up. But, I mean, Texas is still right in the middle of the picture here. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of teams that have been eliminated. And I think when you look at the way that the Yankees are going, and certainly, you know, with Devin Williams and the struggles there, that's kept them from pulling away in the East. I think that has definitely played to the advantage of Toronto, which I didn't think they would have a very good year, but they're still hanging in there pretty good. It's worked to the advantage of Tampa Bay that they're still in it. Even Boston, who I picked to win the pennant at the beginning of the year, and I think I will stick with that pick. Boston would be a little bit further back if the Yankees closer situation was a little bit more solidified at this time. So as we look at the American League, Steve, what are the big things that are popping into your head, particularly that are things that we would not have necessarily expected from the beginning of the year to now?
Well, I think certainly the biggest shock. You just want me to do the AL? Is that what we're talking about?
We'll start with the AL. Yeah, just okay. Whatever your thoughts are, you know, good and bad surprises.
It's shocking to me. And you can say there are a lot of good teams in the AL East, and you'd be right. But four of them right now are going into tonight's, you know, Wednesday night's games. Four of them are under 500, which is kind of shocking to me. The Yankees, I totally agree with you. But frankly, I thought in terms of picking them long term without Garrett Cole.
Right.
And as you said, their closer has been horrific. There's no other way around it. I'm shocked at how bad the Orioles are, although I understand their pitching isn't very good as they're coming in. But they look to me like they had the lineup that could bash with anybody, including the Yankees. And at 13-21 in last place, you know, the Rays are always going to somehow be around, but they never quite get over the hump. And the Red Sox, as you said, you know, the two I was watching, I think it's Kevin Millar who's on MLB Network now, and they were talking about should Devers go to first base. And the consensus, and I don't agree with him at all, though, the consensus was, at least from him, was like, well, just about anybody can play first base. And that's just so not true.
Yeah.
Can some non-first baseman become good first baseman? I would say yes. But when I was a little kid, we saw Mickey Mantle go to first. It was like sad. And you just – even first baseman, you're going to have some talent. You got to be light on your feet. You got to be handle balls in the dirt. You got to know when to get off first. You got to be able to field. And I know Devers is a third baseman. He can do it, and I think he can do it, but it's just not like this. And people seem to think it's like this. And I think it bodes well, frankly. I didn't think the Blue Jays would be in it at all, by the way, but I think it bodes well for the Red Sox because, again, the Yankees – now, look, I think right now Max Fried is the best pitcher in baseball, and I'm not surprised he's the best pitcher in baseball, 6-0, you know, in eight starts. And he was awesome till he got hurt, you know, and I guess the Braves let him go. We'll talk about the Braves, I'm sure, when we get to the National League. But I think because of the, I hate to say mediocrity, but when you have the Yankees at 20-16, Red Sox and Blue Jays 18-19, Rays at 16-19, Orioles 13-21. That's kind of mediocre. I think the Tigers are a bit of a surprise, but mm-hmm. I don't think they're a huge surprise because they showed a lot of life last year.
Yeah.
And, the Guardians are always in the mix, as you know. I love Kwan. I think he's like fifth mm-hmm. in the league in the majors in hitting. I think he's hitting like .333. But mm-hmm. to just watch him, if you want to see a guy who puts the bat on the ball, which once upon a time was what you did, mm-hmm. as opposed to just get that launch angle up and let's go. But, you know, he's a – I don't want to say he's a slap-and-go guy, but he's, you know, he's a good, solid
right.
hitter, period. Yeah. And, you know, the Royals with Witt, who was – if it wasn't for Judge having a super season last year, you know, Witt would have been the MVP. So I think the Central is going to be competitive, except, of course, you know, for the White Sox, who are now being – I'm sure we'll talk a little about the Rockies. I mean, they're on rocky ground, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And out West, I think you're right. The Athletics are the big surprise. Do I think they can keep it going? I don't. But, you know, they're 20-17. They're a half a game behind the Mariners. The Astros are always the Astros, even though they're at 500. Again, it's 36 games. And the Rangers and the Angels, I feel so bad for Mike Trout. I don't know why he let himself be lost in the Anaheim. Because after he was a super-duper star, here comes Ohtani. They could do nothing with Trout and Ohtani. Now, Trout got hurt a lot, I know. And Ohtani is looking to win championships, which he's already won. He's getting more money than he can count, even though I don't know how the Dodgers do that. He's getting like $3 million this year or whatever the numbers are. It's right. like pocket change. But
yeah.
they've done something to become the – I will call them the modern-day Yankees, and I don't view that as the Yankees being so positive when, you know, Kansas City Athletics was like their farm system.
Right.
And they used to just get whoever they needed. It's unbelievable, the history of the Yankees. But now with this
mm-hmm. –
I know Steve Cohen has a lot of money, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, the Mets. But, you know, now with this, the Dodgers are the Yankees. Look how loaded they are. And all they do is keep loading up. This Yamamoto is unbelievable. And Ohtani's Ohtani, and he is coming back to pitch, which I thought there might be a chance he wouldn't, but that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to want him to do in order to be able to truly extract the value on his contract. And I will say, and again, a year ago in this space, I really put over Cincinnati. They had a disappointing year. That was the last one for David Bell. That's why they brought in Terry Francona this year. And again, still a work in progress there. But when I talked about them as far as being one of the teams that's the future of baseball, you look at the American League, you mentioned Detroit, and Detroit has about as good of a case for that in the American League as just about anybody. And this goes to, again, when I started doing our breakdowns last year before the playoffs and started preparing for our playoff shows, that's when it really kind of jumped off the page at me. And I'm now starting to see, and I've seen, you know, in the last 9 months or so, some other folks making the same point that the growing disparity between leagues, because you talk about, you know, the Dodgers are the new Yankees. Soto goes across town from the Yankees to the Mets, and everybody's like, well, that's never happened before. Little sister ended up getting like, no. Steve Cohen owns the Mets now. It doesn't matter what they used to do. You know, these guys that own the Yankees are Steinbrenner and name only. I grew up when George Steinbrenner was the owner of the team, okay? That guy earned the name Steinbrenner. It's kind of like how Peyton Manning won his second Super Bowl as Trent Dilfer. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes the name is very misleading. Okay. So that's a thing where you look at that. By the way, side note on Kevin Millar. You know who's the guy who would want to punch him in the nose for acting like first base is too easy? A guy who I think might have been an old teammate of his, Scott Hatterberg. I think he might have some thoughts on just how easy it is to play first base. So, yeah, let's chill a little bit with the whole anybody can do it kind of a thing, because you're right. Not anybody can do it. And I'll say it because that's a point that Ken would have made if he were here. But you look at the American League and, you know, what you're saying about, well, it looks like kind of mediocrity here. Yeah, exactly. I think that dovetails exactly with what I started saying about 8 or 9 months ago on the show here, which I think is now getting to be more of a mainstream take. Is that the American League is very much up for grabs because you just don't really have anybody pulling away at the north end of this thing. I mean, you could, because if a team truly took advantage of where they're at here, with what I said about Cincinnati, you know who's further down the road to being that team? Baltimore. But in the offseason, there were people that said, hey, rich new owners who are supposed to be better than the Angelos family. you going to do anything about replacing our ace pitcher? Are you going to do anything about this? And all they ended up doing was complaining about the financial disparities of baseball when they own some of the deepest pockets among ownership anywhere. So you get a team, if a team like Baltimore is not going to seize this thing by the throat when they have the window to do so, the same way that Houston did a couple of years ago. When you're on that ascent with the young talent, you got to load up. It's your moment. It's your time. Houston did it at that point in time. But you don't really have anybody doing that in the American League these days. It is kind of anybody's game. And I say, as a Cleveland fan last year, the fact that this team, this slaptastic team, made it to the American League Championship Series when they probably wouldn't have made the playoffs if they were in the National League and had to face the murderer's row of some of the top teams in the National League, any one of, and I think I said before the playoffs, any number of these teams could smash whoever comes out of the American League. I thought that the Dodgers could have, the Mets could have, maybe even the Braves and the Phillies, maybe even Milwaukee. And the Dodgers ended up doing it in five, a gentleman's sweep. But everything you said about that, Steve, I think there's a larger significance to it because I think it ties into what I've said previously, and that is the gap between the leagues is something we're not used to seeing in baseball. I frankly couldn't remember the last time. I don't know if it's happened during my lifetime or how many decades you'd have to go back to find a similar phenomenon to this.
I agree. It's very hard. Certainly not off the top of my head. I will say, though, there are a couple interesting things that have happened in the American League this year. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, but because it's not Eugenio, that's for sure. It's Eugenio Suarez hit four home runs in a game, becoming the 19th person, and I'm sure you saw these stats, 19 four-home run games in the history of baseball, 24 perfect games. They always talk about which is more difficult, throw a perfect game. They're both incredibly difficult to me, but I think it's harder to hit four home runs. That assumes you're getting up four times.
Yeah, true.
And the other thing that happened last week, which I can't believe it's never happened before, but Riley Green on the Tigers, the American League Player of the Week. Okay, what did he do? Well, a week ago Monday, he had two home runs. But then this past Friday against Anaheim, okay, I'm sorry for Anaheim, but against Anaheim, he hit two home runs in the ninth inning, and no Major League Baseball player in the history of baseball. You know, if we talk about three-point shooters in basketball, you have to say, well, since 1986 or, you know, or stuff like that, you know, football, two-point conversions, well, they never had, you know, and that kind of stuff. But Riley Green hit two home runs in the ninth inning of a game against the Anaheim Angels, and it's never happened in the history of baseball. I think they said going back to 1893 or whenever the history of baseball actually started.
Yeah.
But those two things, now those are only one-offs for the American League. It doesn't get them any closer, as you pointed out, to the National League. But I did want to talk briefly about Aaron Judge and what he's doing today, because to see Aaron Judge now these last 2 years and this year, you know, the year he hit 62, I think he had one home run in his first 11 games. Mm-hmm. This year, he's off to an incredible start, and he's so much improved. I've heard already, oh, yeah, he can take that outside pitch and drive it the other way. Well, he wasn't trying to do that the last 5 years. Give me a break. But I think what's happened now, and this is after watching just a lot of Yankee games, for a few years, including the year he hit 62, he'd be called out on a bunch of low strikes. That were low strikes. The man is 6'7". And I think because of his class, you don't really ever see him ever arguing. Even when it's a bad pitch, he doesn't badmouth the umps. And I think that's paying off now, last year, the second half, and this year, where that pitch down and away that was down low and he'd be called out on, A, he's taking it, and B, if it's in the zone, you know, you got the house that Ruth built fence in right field, which he can – he hit a home run the other day. His first time up, he hit a ball 365 feet, but to center field – so it was an out at the warning track. Next time up, he hit a ball down the right field line, 341 feet, home run. And they even can do this now, as you know, only place in baseball where it would have been a home run.
Yeah.
And so, but what he's doing now, right now, and again, it's only 36 games, so I don't want to go too nuts, but he's leading the league in hits. He's got eight more hits than any other player in the league. This guy's a hitter now. He's not just a home run hitter. He's tied with Schwarber, who's having a year. And Cal Raleigh from Seattle, they all have 12. He's tied with Alonso and Kiki Hernandez, RBIs 34. extra base hits. He's tied with Alonso with 23 intentional walks, more than anybody. I assume you'll see a lot of that this year. Batting average, he's hitting .412. The second guy in the major leagues, not just the American League, is his teammate Paul Goldschmidt, who's hitting .351. Who thought that would happen? And then you get to your guy Wilson from the A's, and Pete Alonso is having a year, .341. Don't forget, the Mets are trying to kick him out of town.
Yep.
All the analytics guys, we don't want him, we don't want him, we don't want him. Well, he's in every one of these stats. He's just, you know, behind OBP, Judge's .503. That's Ted Williams territory.
Right.
And then Alonso, to his credit, is second with .463. And you know the OPS plus the slugging. So Judge has video game numbers, 1.275. Alonso is second, 1.123. And Ohtani is third, 1.006. So what Judge is doing, again, it's a 36-game span, I understand, but it's an incredible 36-game span.
It is.
And Fried, as I think I referenced him, well, I'll wait till we get to the National League for Fried.
Well, yeah, and you know, very good points about the kind of season that Judge is having. By the way, Alonso is another reason my keeper team's in first place. I decided to lock him up, even though it was at a high salary. I brought him back.
Good for you, though.
Yeah, it's thank you.
I don't know what the knock was on him. I understand he's not the athletic player they're looking for, but he's going to hit 35, 40 home runs every year. And I'm sorry, I don't know enough about analytics. But I thought the analytics were always like good with the guys who hit a lot of home runs, and they did everything but take him to the airport to leave town. But at the end of the day, he got a short contract. He kind of gambled on himself, probably wishing now he signed a 1 year because they'd be crawling all over the world for him next year. But I like him. He's a gamer. He's not a jerk or anything. He's a very good player. And you're right. He's not going to be, you know, is he the greatest first baseman? He's an average first baseman. Sure. But the numbers he puts up and the home runs he hits, including last year in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
I don't know how you could just want to give up on him. And they're very lucky. And it's all luck for the Mets, not for Alonso, but for the Mets. It's stone luck that they didn't want to pay him what I think he deserves, which is a lot more than he's getting.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And the Mets, that's a good place to start with the National League. And looking at the East here is that it has been a magical start to the season in Queens. They have a lead of, as we're recording this here, 2.5 games over Philadelphia, who's hanging in there. Atlanta, like Baltimore, got off to a very rough start, and there were a lot of people that were kind of burying them early. And that was a thing that always seems stupid to me. I'm even seeing stuff now like, you know, oh, no 0-7 teams ever made the playoffs. Well, first of all, as CBS Sports pointed out, how many 0-7 teams are as good as the Braves? That was a big fluke. Also,
none.
Yeah, none. Also, how many how many years have we had three wild card spots in addition to the three divisional champions?
That's the point.
There's six playoff spots. The Braves were never dead. If the Braves had gone 0-17, get back to me and see if I'm worried. But yeah, so the Braves have dug out of that. They're basically in the middle of the pack here. Washington, with their interesting young talent, is kind of hanging in there. Miami is kind of hanging back here. Alcantara's return has not been all that they wanted it to be. In the Central, again, really not a whole lot of surprises here. The Cubs doing a little bit more of what they were expected to do a year ago. I think Cincinnati is deemed by some to be a bit of a mild kind of disappointment right now, but they're still only 3.5 out of the divisional league. Pittsburgh at 12-26 as we're recording this. Some people might consider that to be a negative disappointment, but again, wasn't that one of the reasons? I think didn't the Pirates cancel their fan fest in the offseason or something like that because of everyone saying to the ownership, hey, cheapskates, spend some money, which I, as a Cleveland fan, very much appreciate people taking that tack. So Pittsburgh, you know, you get what you pay for, right? I mean, you have some of the best pitchers, you know, young pitchers in baseball there. Skeens is remarkable, but if you don't back them up with enough depth, you get what you get. In the West, the Dodgers that get off to the nice early start there, undefeated through a couple of games, kind of cooled off a bit, but they're back out in front. San Diego is hanging in there very nicely. We'll see if they can go toe-to-toe with them all year. San Francisco has been a nice surprise, and you talked about the American League records. At 24-14, San Francisco would be the easy number one seed in the American League right now, which tells you all you need to know. Arizona's kind of hanging in there. You talked about this here. The winner of the 2024 Chicago White Sox Award is the 2025 Colorado Rockies, 6-28 as we are recording this. And I will say, not to keep harkening back to my keeper league all night, but I was so PO'd in my keeper league when I had taken Chase Dollander. We can keep guys up to 10 years. So I took him the year that he was coming out of Tennessee. And, you know, this is great. I got him for $10. Oh, crap. He got drafted by the Rockies. I've had this happen a couple times. I had this happen with Riley Pint a couple of years ago. Like, getting screwed by Colorado drafting guys. Dollander's up in the big leagues now, but big deal. He's with, you know, he's with Colorado. My great pick is going to be wasted here. But so this is just a more extreme manifestation of what Colorado always is. I mean, they're almost always a piece of used toilet paper. But I mean, this is just a worse version of them than usual, I guess. So in the National League, again, take it away wherever you want to, Steve. Any of your positive or negative surprises from what we've seen thus far?
Well, I do want to talk about the Mets because Alonso is having a career year. But we haven't yet talked about Juan Soto. And all I did with Joe Stazak multiple weeks, first when he signed the deal and right before the season started, Soto's a great player. Is he the best player in the major leagues? Not a chance. But he's in the right place in the right time, so he got all the money from the right owner who could afford it. Right. But I will say this, from the beginning of the year till right now, especially if you watch the games, it's a big difference when you Juan Soto and Aaron Judge is up next. Don't get me wrong, Alonso's having an unbelievable season. But so far, Soto has shown that you can pitch to him.
Mm-hmm.
He's hitting 254. It's like, where are the homers? He finally hits two homers in the game, two solo shots, and they lose 4-2. So here we are, and Soto's hitting 254, and he's got five home runs and 14 RBIs in 37 games. So on the one hand, you could say the Mets, 23-14, and Soto has done very little. I won't say nothing, but very little. That's a great sign
because they're going to need him, and that production's going to be there. I'm a big believer in that theory, Steve. This is, you want to be padding your record when your best player is not doing anything. That's exactly where you want to be.
I don't disagree with that, except I don't know. I said two things. It's a big difference when Aaron Judge is behind you.
Sure.
The only other guy who I'd compare him to is Ohtani bats behind you.
Okay.
But the other thing I'll say is, now, he's not a dead pull hitter. He can pull, obviously. He's a lefty, but he does have power to left center, you know, and to left field. But he hit 41 homers last year. And, you know, as we just talked about, much as I love Judge with his 341-foot homer, that was only a homer in Yankee Stadium. He's not getting those fly balls to right field that are home runs last year for Soto.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a problem. So the notion to me anyway, not a big gambler, but the over-under on Soto on home runs this year is 35.
Okay.
After he hit 41. But he hit 41 in Yankee Stadium with Aaron Judge hitting behind him.
Sure.
So you're right. If he becomes Soto, his OBP is 384. You know he's great with drawing walks. He's great. Mm-hmm. Not good. Yep. He's great. But I think that's a problem. Their pitching has been much better than most people, including me, thought they would be.
Sure.
And I have to mention Brandon Nimmo, who got 9 RBIs in one game a couple weeks ago, tying the all-time Met record held by Carl Delgado, who, if you ever watch Carl Delgado hit, the ball went off his bat. They used to talk about how the ball went off like Ted Williams' bat, all these superstars. But when the ball went off Carlos Delgado's bat, you were like, oh, my goodness, who's this guy? I don't think he, you know, barreled it up as much as Ted Williams did or other superstars. But when he got it, he got it. And he had 9 RBIs in the game for the Mets. So I think, don't get me wrong, the Mets are for real. The other team that started as a disappointment, as you said, but now have kind of turned it around, the 0-7 Braves, who now are, let me see, they're not even 500. They're 17-18.
Yeah.
But that means they're 17-11, and that's pretty good after a horrific start. Now, as you know, the reason I like them, and I think they can make some noise. If they were in the AL East, I'd pick them, I think, to win the pennant, because they have no Acuna. When you get him back, you're getting the great player back. I know he's hurt a lot.
Yep.
And Spencer Strider, they came back for one start and got hurt again. But they're coming back supposedly now. The latest I heard, first it was mid-May, but now it's kind of been pushed off till the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't want to have a big talk about injuries, but while I'm talking about them, I'm thinking, what about Stanton on the Yankees? He hasn't even started, you know, playing exhibition games or anything. So, look, health is everything nowadays. To the day I'm not here anymore doing this with you, Rick, I'll be going bigger, faster, stronger, better doctors, better nutrition, better machines, better operations, better this, better that. And if a guy comes out for the seventh inning now, it's, oh, my God, he's coming out for the seventh inning. If Ken was here, he'd be going, yeah, that's right, Steve. Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
And I was watching a thing recently called After Jackie, which is a fascinating documentary. I'm trying to think what station it was on. I think it was on like the Story Channel or something, which has a lot of bios and stuff. But After Jackie, they focused on Bill White, Kurt Flood, and Lou Brock. They focused on a lot of other guys, but those three as the Cardinals. And, you know, and even this, they have Bob Gibson, who obviously passed away a few years ago. But Bob Gibson saying, well, you know, if you didn't come out for the ninth inning when I pitched, there was something wrong with you.
Right. Yeah.
So I just, I still don't understand that. But to have these are terrible. Cole's out for the year before the year starts.
Right.
I mean, this is the world we live in now. I totally get it. But, you know, so I'll say, we know Acuna's coming back. We know Strider's coming back. Will they be healthy for the whole season? Who knows? But if they are, they can make a run right to the top here.
Oh, yeah.
In the East. But I still have the Dodgers. I don't know if we're picking at the end here. But
yeah.
I still have the Dodgers head and shoulders over everybody. It might be harder because of what you say, the quality of the National League. There'll be no easy series there, as there might be in the American League. But the Dodgers have done what they do. Yamamoto has a 0.90 ERA, and he's 4-2.
Yeah.
How does that happen, Rick, with this Dodger lineup?
Yeah.
The other guy I wanted to defend a little is Paul Skenes, because now I saw this thing the other day. The Cardinals beat him for the fourth time. He's 0-4 against the Cardinals. He's 14-3 against the rest of the league. I actually saw an article that said his velocity was down to 98.2 miles per hour in one of his games. Now, they put up his ERA against the Cardinals. His ERA is 2.76. If I told you I had four starts and my ERA was 2.76, you'd say 2-2, 3-1, 4-0. You'd never say he's 0-4. So I don't know why everybody's getting on him.
It is the Pirates, though.
I did have somebody, though, say, if I remembered his name, I would say it, but I don't remember who. I don't want to say it's passing. It might have been him, but I'm not sure. But somebody on ESPN said, well, you know, he only gave up 3 earned runs in 5 innings. Anybody would be happy with that. No, you and I have talked about this with Ken for years.
Right.
Quality start, 3 runs in 6 innings. If you give up 3 runs in 6 innings, your ERA is 4.50 for the year.
Right.
That's not a good start. No. I'm sorry.
No, it's
and here's
not.
A guy who would never accept 3 runs. And he also gave up 3 home runs in a game, I think, for the first time in his career.
Yeah, so he did.
I don't know if they found something on Skenes, but to say 2.76 in these 4 losses to the Cardinals versus 2.05 against everybody else, well, that seems to me that he's a killer against everybody else.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, in those 4 games, maybe it's 5 now, I'm not sure, the Pirates have scored 7 runs total. So give me a break on Skenes. He's an elite pitcher already.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fluky because you got a Cardinals lineup that's if I called them mid, that would be very kind to them, unduly kind. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that he's doing that against them is just a big fluke. Yeah, and as far as it goes with Atlanta, by the way, I will say I'm waiting with bated breath because on my non-keeper team, I actually managed to get Acuna in the 5th round of my draft. So I'm going to get first round value when that guy comes back.
You ain't kidding.
Team's off to a 3-2 start without him. So, yeah, I can't wait.
He's the Sanders of baseball this year for something? Why did he drop so far?
Everybody in that league gets scared of the red cross on the CBS Sports thing here. Like, oh, injured, oh. You know, it's like I've often thought, just for all the lily livers that I play with, if I could find a way to hack CBS Sports to put up more red crosses next to guys' names, that would just be amazing. I'd love to do that one year because I wouldn't lose a game with everybody that I would end up getting. But this is a thing where, yeah, I mean, looking at this, you know, you're saying big picture Dodgers come out of the National League. Although, and I completely concur with you that there will be no easy series in the National League. I mean, the way that it goes here, and there will be one or two teams that miss the playoffs in the National League where we're going to look at it and go, well, that's a team that would have made it to at least the ALCS. I mean, such is the power imbalance right now. Oh. I said Dodgers over Red Sox prior to the season. I think I'm going to stick with that.
I think I'm going to go, well, certainly the Dodgers. You know, I hate picking favorites, as you know, but certainly the Dodgers. I think they're head and shoulders, even though they're in a tough league.
Yeah, how do you not?
And I won't pick the Yankees because I think did I say before Fried when we get to the National League?
Oh, that's right.
I'm thinking of him on Atlanta. Of course, he's on the Yankees. But he is 6-0 in 7 starts with a 1.01 ERA.
Right.
And he's saving any chance that the Yankees have.
Sure.
And because obviously Cole's not coming back. So I apologize for that mistake. I remember thinking, watching him in Atlanta, you know, lefty, he knows how to pitch. Heaven forbid, he knows how to pitch. Yeah. And I remember thinking, I don't know why Atlanta would let him go. And you know, he got a big contract from the Yankees. I think it's 6 years, $218 million or something. But if I have to pick a winner, I'd rather pick the first two winners in the National League. Because either of them I'm kind of leaning with you on the Red Sox, although I'm a little disappointed. I don't know if the Astros can get it together. For one, I view this to be like a final run for them.
Yeah.
So I'll pick either the Red Sox or the Astros. I really thought about picking the Orioles before the season, but just stopped because, again, they didn't do anything. They got a bomb lineup, but they just didn't really do much to help their pitching. And I thought if they did that, I thought you could pick them to win the whole thing in the American League.
That's true. And my initial kind of instinct before the season, I moved away from it. My initial instinct, using the universal theory of Bruce Bochy, was to pick the Rangers this year because they're due on that schedule. But, you know, and again, you know, they're still in it. It's one big kind of clogged pack in the American League, and they kind of came out of a clogged pack 2 years ago. They weren't anybody's, you know, thought like, oh, the Astros or the Rangers are the definitive favorites going into the playoffs, said nobody, not even in the Metroplex. So they came out of it. It was a little bit of maybe a surprise the way that it unfolded. It could be a similar scenario where they come out of it. But again, look out for Detroit because we talked about them before. I mean, if Detroit ends up doing it and comes out of the American League, that would not surprise me at all because they are a young team that's really starting to feel it and find themselves. And again, there's going to be the space for teams like this in the American League to be able to advance in a way that you're not seeing in the National League. And this is a trend that, again, we'll continue to keep our eyes on. It's something that's not going to turn around in season. It's one of these things where it kind of is what it is. It's a fixed thing for right now. We'll see what happens in the offseason going into 2026, if that ends up being the case. But it really is a disparity that, again, we've seen it in other leagues for a long time. In the NBA, on and off for decades, but mostly on. It's been, oh, the Eastern Conference, you know, it doesn't take as much to get out. The Western Conference is a murderer's row. Sometimes you see it with the AFC and the NFC there, you know, but we're not used to seeing it in Major League Baseball. And that to me is one of the big macro level issues here is just this degradation of the American League over a period of time. And whether it be that the National League teams that, I mean, you've got Cohen who's willing to spend in a way that the Dodgers will. The Phillies are putting a lot of money into, you know, their organization. They're doing what San Francisco did in the early 2010s, that when they became a winning organization, you know, Philadelphia, the Bay Area, those are kind of sleeping giants financially, right? That if you have a winning team, all of a sudden you're going to have a lot more resources to be able to put into a team. So Philly's kind of doing that the same way San Francisco did 15 there or 12 years ago, however long it was when they really started investing. So that is kind of the story of it in the National League here. And even San Diego, I mean, as a small market fan, I respect the hell out of what San Diego has done because that gives me the license to say, don't pee on my leg and tell me that it's raining when San Diego is out there spending money. If San Diego can spend money, so can the Dolans, Steve.
You know, we got our own Dolan in New York, as you know.
And yeah,
you just shake your head, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, And again, spending isn't necessarily the issue with him with the franchises. Competency certainly has been over a period of time. Nobody can ever quite put it together in that family, right? There's a good brain trust in the Cleveland front office, but they got no money. New York, Knicks and Rangers, they have money, but can't necessarily put it together. The Dolan family is cursed in that way. And so are those of us who root for their teams, may I say, also, with my trademark self-pity as a sports fan. Oh, but, on that note, great to be able to kind of bring it around because, again, and this is something where Ken Detweiler, Don Koster, are certainly two guys who could always see the humor and the absurdity of sports and in baseball in particular, and two guys who really – loved the game and embodied it in so many different ways. And it's just, a bittersweet thing, here tonight that, great to be on with you. And the three-way segments that you and I and Ken would do were always great. And I will always treasure those. But getting to do them with you moving forward is certainly way more than a consolation. It's great to be able to do. And I look forward to continuing in that vein with you, Steve, as we go along through the 2025 MLB season and beyond.
It's always a pleasure to do this with you or any other sport for that matter, but especially this, I always look forward to it because I'm a baseball guy and I knew Ken, Ken was always around and you were always around and we always had a blast.
Yeah.
I still appreciate doing it and hope to do it for a long time to come.
Yeah. We'll be doing it as long as we're here. And and hopefully that will be for some good period of time. But again, as we saw this spring between Ken Detweiler and Anthony Patrone, our great friends in the FDH family, tomorrow is never guaranteed. That's for doggone sure. But cherishing the days that we have left here to be able to talk baseball and go through everything here. And as I say, nobody better for this occasion than my great friend, Steve Callis from the Callis Remarks podcast with Joe Stazek. Thank you so much, Steve Callis, for being a very big part of this special show. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1829.